Hello, this is Frank Shines, and I'm joined today here by
Granison Shines as well.
How you doing today, Granison?
Doing awesome, man. How are you?
Hey, doing excellent. Does history repeat itself? Is there really any true value in reflection, or is it a waste of time? I'm Frank Shines, the author of Let In But Left Out. And as we mentioned a moment earlier, I'm joined today by Granison Shines, my brother. I'm out in Florida and Granison's out in Arizona. What we're going to do is just kind of informally introduce you all to the concept of what's included in this particular chapter. And then we're going to turn it over to Adrian Starks, who is our professional recorder, to read the chapter. So, Granison, you know, we're doing this recording on November 8th. And yesterday was the big day.
The big day.
Yep.
New president.
Last night, Joe Biden was nominated as the president-elect, and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris was also part of that big kickoff celebration last night. So congratulations to both of them.
Congratulations.
This is an interesting point because we're now at a time in history where we'll be able to kind of compare two things that relate to this chapter, right? One is the coronavirus, the whole pandemic, and the other is leadership. We have chapters that touch on both of those, but the chapter that kind of bridges those things for us in the book is under the section called Call for Reflection. So three sections of the book are included: a call for reflection, a call for balance, and a call for action. And in a call for reflection, we have a chapter, and that chapter is called Transatlantic Trail of Tears in the Rockies. And this is really where we talk about the history and about the value and importance of reflection. Mm-hmm. You'll hear the chapter in detail, but this is what Granison and I wanted to kind of talk to you about before we turn it over to Adrian. So Granison, from your perspective, what's your thoughts about this whole question about whether or not history repeats itself? Is there really any value in kind of looking back and reflecting on things? Sure. You know, the future is different, right? Maybe you go back
Absolutely.
And look at history and maybe you learn the wrong lessons, or maybe there's nothing, you know, you'll fight the past war instead of understanding what's in the future. So what's the real value in the history?
Well, as you said, there's an aspect of leadership that we can adhere to and an actual understanding of how, like you mentioned, the coronavirus, how that was handled. That's going to also go down in history. And one of the things that we can do with noting these nuances of history is that we can always go back if properly documented, right? And you have the information from the people. You can always go back and learn more lessons. Unfortunately, sometimes history tends to be repressed, even family history. And that's one of the bigger reasons why we put this chapter in the book. People can learn from other people's history or family history as well. So it's not just a matter of understanding something about just this family, but what are the core values? What are the core challenges? What are the core solutions that can be extracted from what we wrote here in this book, in the Transatlantic Trail of Tears and the Rockies chapter, that can superimpose itself over another person's life subjectively? And that's where the power of understanding history and reflecting on that to bring it into modern times. That's what I think about from a 10,000 foot view, Frank.
No, I'm with you. You know, as you were kind of touching on the fact that it's not just, you know, national or history of your country, but history of your family, right? It struck me, you know, our father is an ordained minister, Granison is as well. But, you know, one of the things they talk about in the good book is generational curses. You know, those things you pass on from generation to generation, that if you don't deal with those things, they move on in succession. It's kind of like DNA in a way, right? If he doesn't learn something and get value from it and become stronger in the future, then it is at risk, right? The pandemic is kind of an example of that. Obviously, it's jumped across the animal species into the human species, but still, there's a kind of an analogy there as well. Granison, as we speak, I'm showing on our screen for those of you who will be listening to this as an audio podcast. as opposed to the video on YouTube here, is we've got a picture here, and it kind of goes back and it looks at our history, right? We look at our DNA and everything from 23andMe. Mm-hmm. We look at congressional records. We're able to look at the Census Bureau and so forth to confirm a lot of these things and some other historical records. But in basically the 1690s is when the first Africans in our family came over to the U.S. But we also had up in the Northeast, the French Canadian Bolducs and the Irish McGees. And the Africans fought against the British with those two groups, the French Canadians and the Irish Americans, the McGees, in a Revolutionary War. And so what happened is one part of our family were granted what's called freedman status at a very early point in history, right after the Revolutionary War. And then they essentially migrated from the Northeast, settled with Native American Indian tribes. And then there's a group of Ghanaian Africans, particularly from the Strouds side of the family, that was on a reservation in Texas, the Strouds, the Mandridge Stroud, who would have been my great, great, great grandfather. And he married a fellow British young lady. They had this plantation there in Texas. In fact, there's a whole Stroud Creeks around the Brazos River where they still have a lot of property, and there's still a lot of control and history there. But essentially, Mandred Stroud had an affair with a Tawakonian Indian. The Tawakoni Reservation of Indians are now part of the Wichita Nation. That offspring was Louis Stroud, who was my great-grandfather's father. And because of the racism and the carpetbagger taxes that were imposed on the people of the South from the Northeast after the Emancipation Proclamation, the family moved out of Texas to what they called a different country. That different country was the Indian Territory, which was not considered part of the U.S. It's now present-day Oklahoma. But at that time, it was considered a different nation, the Indian Nation, Native American Indians. So they moved the family up to Oklahoma, a place right outside of Chandler, which is where my great-grandfather, his siblings were slaves. He just happened to be born at a time right after Emancipation Proclamation. So he became a freedman just by luck. But consequently, he married a Creek Native American Indian from the McGee side of the family. And then they moved up to Colorado. And then the same thing from, Grandison, my Shine side of the family, my father and his family, they moved on to Native American Indian Territory in Oklahoma. And they ultimately migrated into the Northwest up into Idaho, and then down to California. And when my mother, who was born in Colorado Springs, her father moved to California. My father met her in San Francisco, and the rest is history. So that's kind of a little bit of the history of our family. And then my father remarried Durley Grandison's mom. And so that's kind of whole history in brief of our family. We talk about that in the book, but go ahead, Grandison.
No, that's absolutely right. And rich information like that, everyone has some information in their lineage, in their past, and with grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents. And understanding that is subjective, but it's also enlightening. It's also very enlightening, can add points of wisdom on how you got to where you are, why you grew up where you grew up, understanding those factors. And then moving forward to, okay, now I want to make sure that my children know that, and they know the information, and they can take that information, pass it on to their children as well. And all the while, still not ignoring those lessons learned. If you dig deep, you can find them. Shouldn't be ignored, shouldn't be forgotten, but you have to do the research and put the information out there for your family members to understand as well.
Perfect. So there's a familial history and the lessons that can be learned. One is obviously not just our family, but so many other American families that are listening to this broadcast or are watching this video, their family survived the Revolutionary War. They survived slavery. They still survive smallpox diseases and so forth that were brought over by the Europeans, if you're Native American. They survived the onslaught of the World War I and World War II events, the Great Depression. And we as a nation, if we can make it through those dramatic events all the way up through the Civil Rights era and present day, we can certainly overcome coronavirus. So true. That's kind of from the family side and the historical perspective of the nation. And then from the science side of coronavirus, what we're showing here is a slide that shows the history of how this coronavirus, which goes all the way back to the 1960s, right? So they've known this, you know, going back to the 1960s. But more recently, there was a SARS event coronavirus. There was a MERS coronavirus. And currently, we're in what's called the SARS-CoV-2, which is short name for it is COVID-19, because it was in the year end of 2019 that the virus hit us. But what this picture shows is that the coronavirus, you know, often jumps species from bats when we encroach on wildlife habitat. And then we have our domesticated animals. They could be swines or camels or other animals that get the virus from the bats. And then it jumps across from the bats to us when we slaughter the animals or perhaps accidentally cut an animal and it gets ingested or gets into our blood or into our system somehow, nasal system and so forth, or oral system. And consequently, it then, it's been found that this particular, the coronavirus, is a virus that the animals, particularly the bats, adjust very well to. They have all of the immune system to counter it, but not so much for Americans and for other human species. So that's the challenge that we're up against. But if we look at that whole history, we've known of the sorts of things that have been learned in the past with regards to distancing, social distancing, and wearing masks and so forth to minimize its impact, right? Cleanliness.
Yeah. And when you're dealing with something of this magnitude, going into what you focused on and centered on earlier, is that it segues, it's going to, it needs to have a strong leader from the top managing the situation, right? And we know what happens if you don't have that leader at the top. It can really get out of hand. People aren't on the same page and whatnot. And that's another thing we can attest into history. In some family dynamics, some ecosystem of a family, there's always a leader. And they may have to come up with solutions for their own internal economy as far as the sicknesses and other things that transpire, other challenges. And so now that we face this as a nation, and we are very resilient as humans, as a country as well, it's incumbent upon us to have the correct leadership filtering down from the top that can sing the same song down through the different levels of government all the way down to the family ecosystem, so we can handle or can even continue to handle nuances like the coronavirus with a much more faster executed strategy.
You know, I like what you said there about the importance of leadership. And when I think of the leadership from our family side, and it's no different than whether, you know, you're a leader in your community or your family, an organization, or perhaps even on a global scale. But we talked a moment ago about Louis Stroud, who was my great-grandfather's father. He was, you know, mixed race, owner of the plantation with his father. They're the folks that moved up to Oklahoma with K.D. is his name, is K.D. Stroud. K.D. Stroud, he had 11 kids. You can see them here. And he was such an important leader. When he passed away, you could see the difference with the family, even though they, you know, six of the 11 went on. They wrote, you know, formulas for the Apollo mission, for the return of astronauts from the moon during the Apollo mission. They became Stroud scholars, Columbia University graduates. They went on to, you know, extraordinary achievements, pioneering achievements in a lot of different areas for African-Americans and Native American Indians, and in business as well. But in his late 60s, He lost his eyesight, and he ultimately died in his mid to late 60s time frame. And the family had a difficult time after that. They struggled quite a bit in the absence of his leadership. And the same thing, right, I think we're going to begin to see now is, you know, how does the leadership differ from the Trump administration versus the Biden administration to be determined? But that leadership is an important part of reflection and understanding history. Leaders who don't read and understand history and reflect on those things often do not do the best for their families or their communities or for the nation. Okay, so any other last comments, Granison, before we turn this over to Adrian to read the chapter?
Just to reiterate the point that anyone can learn from past struggles, past challenges, learn from history. It is incumbent upon us to make sure that we magnify that in our lives and take that moving forward with all the way down to our family dynamic.
Excellent point. Great close. So thank you all for your time. Without further ado, we'll turn this over to Adrian Starks, who will read the chapter, A Trail of Tears.
Transatlantic Trail of Tears and the Rockies. I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Sam Cooke, Change Gonna Come. My story is the American story, and America is at an historic inflection point akin to that faced by our founding fathers and my French, Canadian, Irish, and African ancestors who fought in the Revolutionary War. Our generation has inherited the heavy burden of rising wealth and income inequality, growing civil unrest, a global pandemic, and reimagining democracy and free market capitalism, once designed for the physical world only, into a system that serves the digital and physical realities of today. An historical perspective gives us insights on how we might govern ourselves in a manner that protects our nation and its resources, preserves our values and institutions, and encourages upward mobility and the opportunity for more people to attain the American dream in the age of AI, pandemics, and fake news. Rather than taking this historic journey in the traditional manner, I will do so through the eyes of my ancestors, some of whom were already inhabiting this land, others who arrived willingly to escape the tyranny of British rule, and finally, another group who did not come of their own free will. The Shines family comes from a long line of great athletes, artists, ministers, musicians, military soldiers, and hard-working farmers and blue-collar workers who love to hunt and fish. My father was the first of his 11 siblings to graduate from high school and later attend college. Our claim to fame is Grammy Award nominee, Johnny Shines, a Delta Blues songwriter and performer. The Shines side of my family passed down its history through spoken stories shared across generations. On the other hand, the Strouts chronicle their family history in the written word as well as through verbal communication. For this reason, I can assess and share with you more information from my Stroud heritage. My great-grandfather, the Rev. Kimball D. Stroud, known as K.D., was a son of an African slave from Ghana. Kimball is our original African family name. He was born in 1871, less than 8 years after Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863. 2.5 years later, on June 19, 1865, Texas announced the abolition of slavery, setting the stage for the emancipation of slaves from the former Confederate states. Four of K.D.'s older siblings, born prior to the emancipation, were slaves. K.D. married Lulu McGee, a member of the Creek Nation. Her family marched the Trail of Tears, in which an estimated 60,000 to 100,000 Native Americans were forcibly evicted from millions of acres of their homeland in Florida, Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, and North Carolina. in tribute to Lulu and my grandfather, Tandy, my uncle Welvin Strout, told the story of the Trail of Tears through a poem in To Tandy's Children. Here is an excerpt. Tandy's Children. Move along, get going, you red savages, the soldiers ordered, as from their horse backs with long whips they beat the ragged barefoot Indians from their homeland. It was the death march. Get up, get going, and he popped his whip. But the young mother with an infant and the papoose on her back could go no farther. Leave her there to rot, and on they rode. A rider happened by and heard the cries of the infant and the papoose. He took the infant from her dead mother's back and carried that infant to Alton, Illinois. That Indian infant was your great-great-grandmother. Despite smallpox and other diseases that decimated native tribes, Lulu's family was among those who survived. During a March 2020 interview with Connie Shroud, Laurie, granddaughter of KD, I learned of Lulu's obsession with cleanliness and order. As a child, Connie lived with Lulu for several years. Apparently, someone in Lulu's family passed on to her the importance of cleaning to fend off disease, so she was known in the family to be an obsessive germaphobe, constantly cleaning and washing everything within the Shroud household from sunrise to sunset. Cleanliness is next to godliness was a religious phrase passed on from generation to generation in both the Shroud and Shines families. Those habits and words likely contributed to both families' survival during the 1918 Spanish flu. To escape those who were discriminating against and terrorizing blacks and Indians, and to ensure a non-segregated education for their children, Katie and Lulu concluded they had no choice but to go west. Katie, who believed in the value of education, had attended Langston University and studied law under a prominent Oklahoma City attorney. He soon learned of the work of General William Palmer. General Palmer was a Civil War Medal of Honor recipient who sought to abolish slavery. Later, General Palmer became the founder of the Denver and Rio Grande Western Railroad and founded the city of Colorado Springs, where schools were not segregated. KD and Lulu agreed that Colorado Springs was where they would settle down to create a future for their children. One of their children was my grandfather, Tandy Stroud, who would attend Howard University, then later move his family from Colorado to California after my mother was born. In May of 1910, with four children in tow, KD and Lulu moved from Oklahoma to Colorado. What was once a generally fair and egalitarian Indian territory prior to 1907, the year in which Oklahoma became the 46th state of the Union, had now become a land governed by Jim Crow laws, racism, discrimination, and desegregation. Once the family arrived in Colorado Springs, Katie found that even with his college education and teacher certificate, no one in Colorado Springs would permit a black man to become a teacher or professor. So instead, he spent the next 5 years, 10 hours per day, 7 days a week with no vacations or holidays, shoveling coal for 7 cents a ton at the Rock Island Railroad yards 5 miles north of town. He had no horse or automobile, so he would wake before the sun rose and walk, often in sub-zero temperatures, 5 miles north of town to the railroad. Over time, KD was able to buy a horse and a wagon. He started up his own business, hauling trash, ashes, gravel, and fertilizer. By the late 1920s, KD had taken advantage of new technology, the automobile. He acquired motorized trucks and before long was employing both black and white Americans as drivers and handlers for his company, the Shroud Brothers Trucking Company. Despite racism and poverty, Katie and Lulu Shroud's 11 children, 5 boys and 6 girls, went on to blaze new paths for African Americans and Native American indigenous tribes in the areas of scholastic excellence, business, science and engineering, the ministry, the military and government, music and art, and social services. Some of their pioneering achievements, ordered by birth, include Kimball, oldest child and daughter. Kimball Stroud Goffman was a political activist and writer. Because of her influence as the organizer of Black and Hispanic voters into a Democratic Party bloc in Colorado Springs, Colorado Governor Edwin Johnson met with her for political advice and strategy when he ran for senator. Kimball was a correspondent for several Black newspapers, and her article, Black Pride, was published in the Atlantic's Monthly magazine in February 1939. Finally, she was commissioned to write a report on the history of Blacks in the Western United States, but died in 1946 before the piece could be completed. Albert Benn. Albert Benn Stroud, known for his prowess to break horses from the Stroud family and other families, expanded the Stroud business by opening a Chicago brand of the Stroud Brothers Trucking Company. He managed the company into the 1970s. Kelly Dauphus. Kelly Dauphus Stroud broke a 25-year record for the descent down Pikes Peak. He took first place in the Denver Marathon to qualify for the 1928 Olympic trials in Boston. Because of his race, he was not permitted to ride the bus with the other white athletes, so he walked and hitchhiked over 2,000 miles from Denver to Boston. He arrived exhausted 6 hours before the start of the race. Kelly collapsed during the sixth lap of the 5,000-meter run from malnutrition and exhaustion. Kelly graduated top of his high school class and earned a scholarship to Harvard University, but attended Colorado College through a more affordable Sachs Foundation and Perkins scholarship. Later, under a Rosenwald Fellowship, he studied at the University of Mexico, where he completed his master's thesis on the history of African Americans in Spanish. Finally, Kelly started up a moving and storage business in Portland, Oregon, which was destroyed during the 1960s civil rights riots. Effie. A graduate of Colorado College and Columbia University, Effie was one of the first Americans to complete the library sciences master's degree at Columbia University. She was also the first recipient of a Sachs scholarship in 1927. The scholarship continues to this day. In December 2019, Colorado College named the Stroud Scholars Program in honor of Effie and Kelly Dauphus. Tandy. Howard University graduate, minister, and farmer. My grandfather, Tandy, raised a family of 10 children and was the owner of acres of farm country in Hayward Hills, California, near Silicon Valley. His sons graduated from San Jose State and Stanford Universities. One of his sons is one of the wealthiest Black men in America and has contributed to and supported the William J. Clinton Presidential Library in Little Rock, Arkansas. Over decades, he inspired and mentored me on business matters and passed along family history and wisdom. Jack. Graduated from UC Boulder in his 40s following the death of his mother, Lulu. He promised Lulu that he would return to college and complete his degree. He calculated many of the mathematical equations for control systems that guided the rockets for NASA's Apollo 1 mission. He conducted the technical analysis and co-wrote a 1959 report on predicting radio transmission losses for the National Bureau of Standards. Lulu. Lulu Stroud Pollard. Colorado's Lulu Pollard Park is named in Lulu's honor for her work as a social activist and Colorado Springs historian. Her works are retained in the Colorado Pioneers Museum in Colorado Springs. My grandfather, cousins, and great aunts and uncles have traced the Stroud family history back to the Magees of the Creek Nation in Ireland, the Strouds from England, the French-Canadian Bolducks, and the Kimball tribe of Ghana. The early Shines and Stroud families endured slavery, the Revolutionary War, the Trail of Tears, the Civil War, and Emancipation Proclamation, the Industrial Revolution, the Spanish Flu, the Great Depression, two World Wars, the Korean War, Vietnam, and the Civil Rights Era. If our family and many others like ours can survive those early historical challenges and adapt to the myriad technology advancements of their time, surely our generation can come together to ultimately tame the novel coronavirus, address racial and wealth inequality, and adapt to the tech changes that lie before us.